evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, August 26, 2019. The editor of Al-Watan newspaper is a free man once again.
I was released on Saturday following orders from the National Security Director, who ordered my immediate release, and I went home, but I have an appointment with them today.
And South Sudan's finance minister fires the tax revenue authority chief.
They will tell you that the whole minister is confused running around. We tell you that they've not received the money. Meanwhile, you have taken overdraft from the central bank, so the money we are sent to the overdraft, and you tell you don't receive. You are eating behind, nobody knows. I'm telling you, they are lying.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The editor-in-chief of Al-Watan Arabic Daily says South Sudan's National Security Service released him without a charge over the weekend after spending 1 month at the National Security Headquarters in Juba. Michael Christopher was picked from a Kenya Airways plane bound to Nairobi, and his passport was confiscated by national security officials at Juba Airport. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Michael Christopher was arrested in July and had been under detention at the National Security Service headquarters, locally known as Blue House. Speaking in Arabic, he says he was let go on Saturday.
I was released on Saturday following orders from the National Security Director, who ordered my immediate release, and I went home, but I have an appointment with them today to get my passport.
Christopher says he was treated well while under detention. He says he was neither physically tortured nor interrogated.
I was worried that I will be tortured, but I got a different environment. They put me in a good place for 39 days, as I was sure I had committed no crime. I was eating well, with food and water being brought from outside every day, since I had a stomach problem. My family members were given access to visit me regularly, at least 3 times a week.
The country's media authority sat down Christopher's newspaper, Al-Watan, and refused to renew his operating license after he declined to apologize to the Sudanese embassy after publishing opinion articles supporting protests against former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. Christopher says he also received death threats for the opinions he expressed. He says the National Security Service never explained to him why he was arrested and detained. Christopher says he hopes to resume publishing his newspaper in a week's time. He says the media authority has asked him to pay 100,000 South Sudanese pounds, equivalent to about $330, for renewing his license and a fine of 80,000 South Sudanese pounds before he resumes publishing his newspaper.
They asked me to make clarification on my opinion on VOA during my interview, but I told them that the media authority did not threaten me with death. The person who threatened me was an individual, and I opened a case in a police station. What they have done wrong is by closing my newspaper, which has cost me losses. I have employees that I am still paying their salaries, their house rent and designer fee for the last 7 months, which is about $13,000. But we have made a dialogue with the media authority before my arrest, and maybe within a few days, my newspaper will be reopened.
Christopher and his wife, Balita Rial, were pulled out of a plane to Nairobi, where he was headed for a medical trip. He went to the National Security Service to inquire why the agency was detaining his passport, but was instead detained. Since his detention, the United States, international human rights groups, and local activists all joined calls to pressure the National Security Service to release Christopher. Kwang Pal Chang is the chairperson of South Sudan's Editors Forum, one of the bodies that called for his release. Kwang welcomes Christopher's release, but says there was no reason for his arrest.
I can say personally, those are the characteristics of a police state where rule of law, are not the order of the day, because somebody with no evidence will just put you in, suspecting you the way you write, because the way you write, the way you are vocal on your writing, you're writing your opinion or publishing a story that are really touching what is happening around in the region. For example, the case of Christopher, because he has been writing about the uprising in Sudan. And this did not go well with some people in the government.
Chang advises all media houses to file their necessary documents with the media authority in order to operate in South Sudan.
You should not operate outside the law, because if you operate outside the law, it will not be you, it will not be about your writing, it will be about you also operating illegally. And you will not have a reason to justify that, no, I was shut down because of my writing. The government will just have an evidence. They'll just say you are illegally operating. So that one will be now, it will be now the top of the news, or it will be an issue, the main issue that will be discussed, not about how you write.
For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudan's finance minister, Salvatore Garang, fired Olympio Atipo, South Sudan's revenue authority chief, on Friday. A Juba-based economist says Atipo's firing will pave way for those who oppose new systems to evade taxes. Lasuba Memo has more for VOA in Juba.
Tax Revenue Authority Commissioner Olympio Atipo confirmed to the Voice of America he was fired shortly after receiving his termination letter on Friday.
Yes, I also received that letter from the Minister of Finance, relieving him from office and terminating the board members. By law, it's the president who's supposed to terminate my contract anyway. But this is the situation here. So I am around. I'll write my report and present to the president before I leave.
When contacted today for further details about his sacking, Atipo told South Sudan In Focus that he would not comment on the matter until a later date. In July, Atipo said the Revenue Authority collected $36 million and about 28 million South Sudanese pounds between January and June, a huge increase over previous years. In late July, Atipo accused finance ministry officials of receiving cash remittances from the Revenue Authority, saying, quote, "Some may be eating this money, who knows?" South Sudan In Focus obtained a copy of a bank overdraft from South Sudan Central Bank for the Tax Revenue Authority's account. A bank overdraft in economic terms allows the account holder, in this case the finance ministry, to continue withdrawing money even when the account has no funds in it or has insufficient funds to cover the withdrawal. Atipo says the overdraft is a proof of what had been going on.
They will tell you that the whole minister is confused running around. We will tell you that they have not received the money. Meanwhile, you have taken overdraft from the central bank, so the money we are sent to the overdraft, and you tell you don't receive. You are eating behind, nobody knows. I'm telling you, they are lying.
Deputy Minister of Finance John Dor denies finance ministry officials were withdrawing funds from the Tax Revenue Authority's bank account.
It's not that we talk about it, but it is there. We receive it, we put it according to the budget lines, according to the items that have been enumerated. But we don't need to talk about it. In fact, what is not really normal is that I think our friends from the National Revenue Authority would like always to advertise it, to talk, go to media and say we have done that. This is not our habit, of course.
In July, Atipo said finance officials approved tax write-offs for a multiple million-dollar construction company identified as RAC Resource Group. A finance ministry letter approving the request for a RAC tax exemption dated June 14, it states the company planned to import factory service equipment, medical items, fuel, agricultural and petroleum products, construction materials and food worth more than $490 million. Atipo says he revoked the exemption after learning from comments on social media and other sources that the RAC's tax exemption request had come directly from Maikai, the minister in the office of the president, and his letter was addressed to the Minister of Finance. Ahmed Morjan, a lecturer of economics at the University of Juba, says Salvatore Garang has no authority to remove Atipo.
It is the president who seems to have the highest mandate to terminate his service or to fire him. So it was like a surprise to me have the commissioner being fired by Minister of Finance. The Minister of Finance would have recommended the dismissal or whatever should happen to him, then the president actually passes the decree. Because once you're appointed by decree, and it is by decree that you should be removed. If the reason is not properly known and there is no transparency into the reason why he had been fired, then yet if any other commissioner is appointed, still the same problem might arise.
Morgan says the revenue authority is not fully established and removing Atipo will negatively affect the tax collection system. He warns those opposed to Atipo's administrative style will take advantage of his absence to abuse that system.
Bringing in a new person is not healthy for the commission of the Land Revenue Authority, as one. Two, we may also have some confusion. You know, he has already set up a system. Now, if there are those who want to explore the system, in the interim, they will be able to explore the system such that we will expect it to negatively affect the revenue collection.
Morgan says a lack of communication and coordination between the Finance Ministry and the National Revenue Authority led to Atipo's sacking. It remains unclear if President Kiir will reverse Garang's decision. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo reporting in Juba.
Still in Juba, China has donated $10 million to provide clean drinking water to South Sudanese in various states across the country. According to two memoranda of understanding signed on Friday between Beijing and Juba, China will fund the drilling of dozens of boreholes and improve hospital services in Rumbek. Onen Walter Solomon reports for VOA from Juba.
At the MOU's signing in Juba, Hua Ning, the Chinese ambassador to South Sudan, said the new boreholes funded by China will provide clean drinking water to millions of South Sudanese in four states.
Chinese government is going to help build 47 drilling boreholes, of which 32 are normal wells and the rest are hand-bound. These boreholes will be distributed to four states, including Terracotta State, Yellow River State, Eastern Lake State, and the Jubek State of South Sudan.
52-year-old Adiu Jeng, a resident of Juba's Jebel Kujur suburb, says it's difficult to find clean drinking water. Speaking in Arabic, she says she and her neighbors often have to fill several jerrycans of water more than a kilometer from home.
A drum of water costs 300 South Sudanese pounds. Where do we find money to buy it? Unless you wait until water trucks come. Only one borehole is here. Can it supply all the residents here? My chest is now aching because of carrying water.
Ambassador Ning says his government will also fund the renovation of the Kiir Mayardit Women's Hospital in Rumbek.
We are going to send expert teams to help to provide technical service, maintenance of the building and the equipment, and help to provide training programs for the local staff.
Ambassador Ning says China will provide tens of millions of dollars for both projects.
The first project will cost about 50 million renminbi, roughly 7 million US dollars. And the second, it will cost almost 20 million RMB. So it is like I think it's near 3 million US dollars. So totally is about 10 million US dollars. Because we need to further the feasibility studies, technical survey will be followed after our signing of the two programs.
42-year-old Peter Yak, a Boro resident currently living in Juba, says while the government is focused on implementing the revitalized peace agreement, it should also be providing health services nationwide.
Supposing you have fallen sick today, you cannot say you have peace, and the sickness wants to take away your life. Let them finish the construction of the hospital. After constructing the hospital, other development can follow. If we have clean water from the boreholes and wells drilled, good hospitals, schools and roads, These are the four important things we want.
Ambassador Mayen Dotwol, the undersecretary in South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry, who signed the Memoranda of Understanding on behalf of the Kerry administration, praised China for funding the water and hospital projects.
You have been there with us during our crisis since 2013 after this movement. And we want the same spirit to continue so that people of South Sudan and people of China should work together. What we have signed today, it is an indication that China is still there, standing with us.
The Kerry Mayardit Women's Hospital opened in July 2014 at a cost of $6 million. Much of that money came from China. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the conflict in English-speaking part of Cameroon. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is paying dowry a social necessity or an obstacle to marriage?
Although I don't think it's absolutely necessary, I think it's very important to symbolize you being able to provide for a family that you want.
I don't think it is an obstacle because, first of all, paying dowry, it's still the relationship between the two partners. Especially when you paid dowry to your in-laws, they have to respect you much. So if you have not paid any dowry, then people will not give you that respect.
If you love someone, you're willing to pay whatever price it is as a sign of appreciating.
I think it's a social necessity and it's also not an obstacle. Make the society aware that I have taken this woman as my wife.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Thousands of people have deserted the country's English-speaking regions after a bloody weekend in Cameroon. Fighting between the military and separatists left at least 40 people dead and a prominent Catholic bishop was abducted. The renewed fighting comes after a military tribunal ordered separatist leaders imprisoned for life. From English-speaking town of Bamenda, Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports the new violence has dashed hopes that schools will reopen this week after being closed for years.
Six 600 people wait at Amomeza, a bus terminal in Cameroon's northwestern town of Bamenda, seeking rights to French-speaking towns. Like other bus companies in this area, the agency here has been overwhelmed with thousands of travelers leaving the English-speaking area over the past week. Eunice Tanlaka, a 32-year-old, says bus station officials have promised she and her two children will be able to get on the next bus for Yaoundé, the capital.
I've been tired the whole day. The children have been tired. The fatigue is just too much. Talk less of the transport fare that has been increased. It has not been easy on us, seriously.
Tanlaka said she is leaving Bamenda because separatist groups ordered businesses closed for at least 2 weeks and attacked people who defied their instructions. 23-year-old Elizabeth Mue says she left the English-speaking town of Ndop when a military attack against separatist fighters killed six civilians, including a baby.
How can you be fighting for someone and then you kill them? The military says they are for the people, but then again tend to kill them. So it's a whole confusing situation and we don't know who to walk to for help.
The government says at least 40 people were killed in renewed fighting between the military and separatist fighters in the English-speaking towns of Ndop, Bafut, Kumbu, Bamenda, Mamfe and Kumba. At least 8 people, including the Catholic bishop of the Kumbo diocese, George Nkwo, were kidnapped. The bishop was released when priests and hundreds of Catholics started marching to the bush areas where the separatists hide, demanding his freedom. The military says it is hunting for the other kidnapped victims. Deben Chofo, governor of the English-speaking Northwest region, says he has deployed troops to protect the population. He urged the people not to flee and to assist the government in assuring their own security.
Within our system of popular defense, I call on everybody, the population, traditional rulers, the administrative authorities, to revamp and remobilize the vigilante group in the cities, the villages, and the remote areas of the region. We also need the contribution of the population to ease the task of the security forces.
The recent attacks began after a Yaounde military tribunal said it had found separatist leader Julius Ayuktabe and his 9 supporters guilty of secession, terrorism, and hostility against the state. The tribunal handed down life prison sentences. Separatists on social media ordered everyone in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions to stay home to protest the sentences. They vowed that schools will not open in the region until their leader is freed. Violence erupted in the English-speaking regions in 2016 when teachers and lawyers protested alleged discrimination at the hands of the French-speaking majority. The government responded with a crackdown that sparked an armed movement for an independent English-speaking state. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bamenda, Cameroon.
From Cameroon, we move to Zimbabwe. 1 year ago today, President Emmerson Mnangagwa was sworn as president of Zimbabwe. Since then, the country has been rocked by political and economic problems, including high inflation, shortage of currency notes, scarce electricity, and rising fuel prices. Simon Kaya Moyo, spokesperson for the ruling ZANU-PF party, says the government has covered a lot of grounds in terms of meeting the development aspiration of Zimbabweans and accused the main opposition movement for democratic change of opposing development of the country by not recognizing Mnangagwa as president of Zimbabwe.
Our position is that Zimbabwe is far worse off than it was a year ago. It's been on a steady decline, especially politically speaking. The democratic space has been closed down dramatically in the past year. And also economically speaking, the economy has shrunk dramatically. So Zimbabweans are in a worse off situation today than they were a year ago.
I did speak with...
Well, the party which brought about freedom and independence, it must also be clear that we won these elections because our manifesto was based on unity, fighting corruption, development, re-engagement, and the creation of jobs. We have, of course, since then, a year on, I think covered a lot of ground in terms of meeting the aspirations of our people.
When President Mnangagwa's government took over, you had promised a united Zimbabwe, and I think the president himself talked about a brighter future for Zimbabwe. I want you to first address the issue of a united Zimbabwe, because it seems to me the opposition, the government, they are going in different directions.
We are not responsible for the opposition. If they've got their own agenda, which is against development, there's not much we can do about it. We'll proceed with our own agenda in terms of the theme I've given you in terms of our manifesto. The opposition say that they don't recognize our president after the elections. And we said, why? Well, they said, well, they were going to go to the courts. Indeed, that is their constitutional right. And they went to the highest court of the land and lost the case. And they still continue to say, no, they won. So what should we do about that? We've called all the parties to come to a round table to discuss our challenges as a family. But the MDC, which is the main opposition, has refused to come to the party. And all they want are demonstrations, which are very destructive, by the way. And they were saying that's not the way to go. The way to go is for us to engage in dialogue with everybody interested, everyone interested.
The Zimbabwe economy is suffering from very high inflation, cash shortage, leaving some Zimbabweans to even wonder, was Zimbabwe better under Robert Mugabe? What's happening?
Well, the economy has gone fairly well, but of course heavily affected by the imposition of illegal sanctions from the West, particularly from Europe and America. So these sanctions have to go because they're illegal.
That was the spokesman for MDC speaking with my colleague James Batty from the capital, Harare.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
And that's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song You Are One in a Million by Justin Simpleman. We've been listening to Justin Simpleman with the song You Are One in a Million. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you joining us this evening. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. La bema.